Okay, welcome everybody. This is an informal hearing. I'm Randy Christman, Chair of the Commission, and joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Julie Fedorchek. This is a XL rate modification proposal that we're going to be discussing. It is case number PU-23-337. If I didn't say it, it's January 16, 2024. At 1:30, and I mentioned the commissioners who are in the room. Did you have any comments, either of you, before we start?
No, I do not. Nope, I don't either.
Okay, so then we'll go around the room. Have everybody identify yourselves into the microphone so that the recording has a record of who was here.
Adam Renfant, staff.
Brian Johnson, staff.
Alex Nesbitt, I'm a regulatory policy specialist with XL Energy out of Fargo.
Victor Shook with staff.
Lee Clark with staff.
Okay, and I want to emphasize that informal hearings involve only undisputed facts. If we run into any details that are under dispute, we'll have to stop this and move into a formal hearing at another time. With that, I will turn it over to you, Mr. Nisbet. Give us some information.
Perfect. Will do. Thank you, commissioners and staff, for having me. Before I get into it a little bit, I think I'd like to introduce, I believe Ryan Brewers is on via a go-to meeting link. Ryan, if you could maybe introduce yourself and just a little bit about your area and what you do for the company.
Ryan, we can't hear you on our end yet.
He's like, okay, well, I'll hit the button. And that's what I want to do.
I've been there like so many times.
That one. Is that better? You can hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Again, sorry about the technical difficulties, but Ryan Brewers, I'm the manager of the demand management team here at XL Energy, and my team runs all of our demand management programs across the 8 states we serve.
Perfect. Thank you, Ryan. And so today I'll be providing just sort of a brief historical lesson about the Saver Switch program, the overall changing landscape regarding demand response programs within the company, and the need for the revisions that we sought, and then go over the revisions a little bit more. If at any point in time you have any questions, you can stop in, you can stop, interrupt me, and I'll try to answer the question. If it's of a more technical nature, I'll defer to Ryan on those questions. So we're going to go to the first slide, which is slide 2. It's the first substantive slide. So this is our controlled air conditioning and water heating rider. Generally, the customer, they'll see it, and it's called the Saver Switch program. As far as this application itself and the tariff revisions that we're seeking, it only has to deal with the air conditioning portion of it. This doesn't impact the water heater portion. Our Saver Switch program, in the context of air conditioning, it's just your typical shedding and then shifting. We'll be shedding load during that period of time and then shifting it to a different period. And so, as I said, this is having to do with air conditioning units. What we're trying to do is reduce the peak loads when needed by reducing load from air conditioners. In North Dakota, we have 12,000 residential and 600 commercial North Dakota customers that are currently enrolled in this program. That gives us about 10 megawatts of peak load reduction. Also, to just provide a little bit of context with this, on average, I think we maybe only see 1 to 2 control events per year in North Dakota. And each control event lasts for about 4 hours. And so what this program is doing is, in the way that the tariff is currently drafted, is if we have an event where we're trying to shed some of that load, we'll cycle people's air conditioners off at 15-minute intervals. It'll be 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off. The load control, we have a switch that's installed between the thermostat and the AC unit. The company will either get internal notifications or external notifications from MISO that there could be an event, or sometimes there's economic drivers as to when we would use this as well. So that's pretty much when we will use this program to shed that load. And like I just said, it's about 1 to 2 control events per year in North Dakota on average, so not a lot, and it's 4. And as I'll talk a little bit more in the slides, when this happens, people, to my understanding, usually don't even know that it is happening. People's air condition, unless it's the hottest days of the summer, they will be intermittently going off and on anyway. And if it is one of those hot days, which is maybe when this would most want to be used anyway, the air conditioning unit itself, it wouldn't be blowing cold air, but the fan would still be running. So, but at most, it would be only off 50% of the time. This is really just a way to sort of shift and shape, shed that little bit for that 10 megawatts or so. So it's not a lot, but it's something. It's a tool in the toolkit that we have for some of these, one of the more stressful events that could occur on the hottest summer days. And that's another thing to point out is that this program, it's generally just implemented during the summer months, and that's when people would be seeing a reduction in their monthly bill as well through this program.
So Alex, do you prefer questions as you go, or do you want to?
Jump in whenever you'd like.
Okay, because this is on the topic of one of the things that I've been waiting for and just I don't understand.
Yep.
In the past, I've been familiar with people, you could volunteer to have a interruptible load where, okay, at certain times and maybe within certain constraints in a year, you just didn't get power. But that's not what you're talking about here. So how do you know that, how are you able to shut off the air conditioner but not the water heater and not even the fan within the air conditioner? What do you have to physically do in order to have that control in someone's residence or business?
And so that's where this is, we have, I think it's about 90,000 residential customers in North Dakota. Only 12,000 are enrolled in this program. And for it to be effectuated, there is that signal that's in between the thermostat AC unit and the compressor. So that switch, that's controlled by the company, and it's only controlling the condenser portion of it. And so, Ryan, I don't know if you maybe want to talk a little bit more about it, but, yeah, this is a very sort of specialized, it's not turning anything else on other than just that actual compressor unit. So, Ryan, if you maybe wanted to provide a bit more background or specificity on what this is actually doing and what it's targeting.
So currently what we do is we have an electrician come out and they'll install a load switch on typically on the outside of the house at the air conditioning unit itself. And that switch will interrupt that signal, as Alex said, going from thermostat to the condenser. So it's an externally mounted switch. And then it receives a paging signal from us. So we use the paging network.
We lost you again.
Receives it and does its control.
Can you put him on the screen, Clayton?
Any better?
No, that came through, Claire.
Okay. Oh. I apologize. I don't. Settings are kind of wonky here, but there's a load switch that we have installed on the outside of the house from usually by an electrician. And that load switch interrupts the signal between the thermostat and the condenser, as Alex mentioned. And so on an event day, we send a paging signal to that switch, and that's what tells it to control during that event. And then, like you said, typically it's a 4-hour event that we do that. So it's something that's typically external to the residents. So again, on the outside of the house, usually right by the air conditioning unit itself.
Do they pay a fee for the electrician to get that hooked up?
No, it's part of our program cost. So Saver Switch is at no cost to the customer to sign up for it. That we bear all the costs, and then as they volunteer for that program, they do receive monthly bill credits for June, July, August, and September.
And if you chose to evolve the program in the future, would that switch be able to allow the machine to run but just control the thermostat?
We do have some, I'll say, evolution plan for the switch. Right now we use that paging network, so it's one way. So we don't get a lot of feedback necessarily on what's happening. We do have plans to install two-way switches, which will then communicate back and forth to us. But right now, the way that this program works is it is just a cycling of that compressor on and off, in that currently right now 50% interval where it would run for 50% of the time, off for 50% of the time. We do have thermostat programs in other jurisdictions that work off maybe a smart thermostat.
And Sherry, were you going to ask? It looked like you were getting ready.
Yeah, but finish up.
No, that concludes mine for
okay.
Now.
Ryan, I just want to clarify. So that is put on when they sign up for the program, right? Only those customers that sign up for the Saver Switch program on the outside of the house?
Yep.
And then they get a bill credit during the summer months being on this program? Is that a flat rate or is that an average? That bill credit.
It's a $10 flat rate per month.
Okay.
Just in the summer months, or is it all year round, the $10?
Just in the summer months. While we could control in the winter months for AC, we wouldn't get any load relief.
Yeah. So but I thought it's during the month. Their savings was spread out. So is it 3 months that they say? So I said $30 a year, or how many of your
4 months? So
four.
June, July, August, and September. Whether we call the program or not, they see that bill credit.
Do you have any more, Sherry?
No, go ahead.
So, Brian, is there a maximum number of hours? You've mentioned four, but could it go on for a week? If you needed it in a real heat surge,
I would say we wouldn't control it continually for a week, and we try not to control it like back to back days for folks. There may be grid instances where that has to happen, but typically it could be a 4-hour period. It's that really that peak portion of the day that we're trying to clip off for customers. So. Generally speaking, we have other programs we can call as well. So we try not to hit the same customers day after day after day if we can avoid it.
But there's nothing in the tariff that prevents you from doing that?
Correct. I think from a max hours perspective, annual hours, we're at 300 hours. But again, from our history, we haven't gotten anywhere close to that.
Sure. And then... are you accredited for that 10 megawatts? Does that go towards your capacity requirements in MISO?
Most of it is. We don't register all of it. And that's because, let's say we had to call it on a day that maybe it wasn't a peak hot day. We're not going to get all of that max savings on that peak hot day. So I don't know what the percentage is, but we will register most of it, but not all of it.
Okay. And then I see you have some holidays listed that will not normally occur, but you're not prevented from using it on one of those holidays. Well, let's see. Yeah, 4th of July. You're not prevented, or Memorial Day or Labor Day.
Right. But again, generally those holiday days, You know, businesses aren't running, so we don't see typically as big of a burden on the grid during those days.
Got it. Thank you.
I just have one more question. Ryan, the event, will it last, controlled event, will it always last 4 hours? So if the Tampa, it's like, you'll control it for 4 hours, or could it be 2 hours, or will it always be 4 hours into this event?
It could be less. Okay. Generally speaking, though, our events are 4 hours is what they've historically been. You know, it'll all depend on kind of the forecast and you know, how much load relief for how much time we need it for. So I would say rule of thumb will be 4 hours, but it could be less.
Okay, thank you.
All good questions. I'll maybe if you pull, or I can just, okay. And a little bit of history. These next two slides are going over some of the history as far as what's changed and what's requiring these modifications to the tariff. So as time has come on, we've seen more efficiency with air conditioning units, which is a good thing, but then it also means that you just have less load that you can call upon to shed in circumstances where you might have an event. So in the past, available load for SaverSwitch per residential customer, we used to see it at about 1.04 kilowatts. Now it's decreased to 0.69 kilowatts. Another thing that's changed in North Dakota and overall in our service territory is that we've been replacing, it used to be just sort of a simple switch where control 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off. You would end up having some free ridership in that, where that's what their AC units would be doing anyway. So now with these adaptive switches, it has an adaptive algorithm where it'll be seeing how it normally would be operating. So it'll now be operating it at 50% of what it's normally doing, as compared to just 15 minutes on, 15 minutes off. So that's where the 50% to 60% change that we're going to be seeing what's being sought in this tariff revision. Another point to make on this is that all these adaptive switches that we're installing, these are either new customers that are coming into the program, or it's old switches that are being replaced. So those are the ones that are getting these new adaptive switches with the making sure we're getting rid of free ridership, and we'll be going from the 50% to 60%. We're currently have about 50% of North Dakota customers that are in this program. About 50% have that adaptive algorithm switch. And so that sort of leads into the last main substantive slide that I had as far as why we're going from that 50 to 60%. It's just going to be sort of another tool in our toolkit if necessary to get additional megawatts that we can shed or shift. And also the reason that we're doing this is that I think in Minnesota this revision has already been approved in our tariff. South Dakota, we're currently seeking it there. And just to have operational simplicity, it would be nice to have across the board to be able to implement this at a 60% if necessary. And also we make reference to the 80% reduction that we would seek during a NERC level 2 system emergency. I asked a bit more questions just internally. To their knowledge, we don't know when the last time we had a NERC level 2 event was, but it's just nice to have that available at the ready if necessary. And so when that would happen, and sometimes, like I referenced earlier, we're making these decisions sometimes internally, sometimes for economic, and then also sometimes MISO reaches out to us to let us know that an event is going to be happening. In this NERC level 2 event, to my knowledge, that would be MISO telling us that an an event, big event might be coming and start ramping up to this potential for 80% on this program. I don't know, Ryan, is there anything you'd want to add in about any of those things? The flexibility, the last bullet point, what you're saying is it's the flexibility to call on this if necessary. Obviously, we haven't been using it much in North Dakota, the 1 to 2 events, 4 hours at each event, but to just have that there if necessary is helpful.
Yeah, and, you know, as we, you know, as we prepare for a grid that's going to have more intermittent generation to it, you know, there is the potential that, you know, things can change rather quickly, and being able to, I'll say, give more if it's needed, you know, in that emergency event, that NERC level 2 system emergency, is a powerful tool to have. I will say that, you know, we haven't had a ton of control days here in the past, but, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, you know, a 12 to 15 interruptions per year was very common. And in 2007 was probably our last kind of real busy year. We had 18 interruptions, and our attrition rate that year was 0.5%, so half of a percent. Our current attrition rate is about 0.8% for 2022. So very low attrition rate. And Alex kind of alluded to it, that one of the beauties behind this program is I don't think customers are aware that a control event is happening. They don't really get discomfort in the house. You know, like I said, he mentioned that the fan is still circulating that cooled air from before. So, you know, it is really a, I don't know that customers really feel any discomfort during an event.
Well, I was first going to say, if you're controlling 80%, I could see a lot of fans being plugged in and to counteract that. So my question to you is...
Actually, but...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No. Well, so what are you doing? How do you alert the customers? Do they get a text message or something that... this control is going on, and if it's wrapped up from 60% to 80%, are you notifying them?
Should the changes go through, we will do a mailer or a notice to them that, you know, the parameters of the program have changed. And certainly at the beginning of the year, you know, we have kind of going into control season, and then as part of their bill review, they do have, you know, they do get that credit, that saver switch credit on their bill in the summer months.
Do they have to renew that program annually, or in order to stop it, do they have to opt out? I mean,
In order to stop it, they would have to unenroll from it.
Unenroll. So one more question. What other steps, I mean, you're looking at... during peak events on how to control load, what other avenues have you guys looked at besides this program?
Certainly we've had, I'll say new programs that we've launched in other jurisdictions to do this and grow even our like commercial industrial programs as well, our interruptible rate program, trying to grow those over the years as well. So we have a fairly large portfolio here in the upper Midwest. I would say between our five upper Midwest states, we've probably grown that capacity, you know, in the 400 to 500 megawatt range here over the last few years. So this has certainly been a growth area for us, and it is a needed tool that we have to help maintain grid reliability.
Do the customers, Ryan, do the customers get an added financial benefit with a increased percentage, 60% to 80%? Are you guys giving an added increase in that $10?
Not current. We don't We don't have it currently planned for that way. It is an emergency provision that we would do it only operated in. So it's not something that we anticipate having to operate at, but having that flexibility is key for us.
So that's the 80%, but you are increasing from 50 to 60% on all of them, right? With that new algorithm?
Correct.
How does that give you more megawatts of capacity, like of peak load shaving?
I would say it actually kind of returns us back to where we were. As Alex mentioned, you know, the efficiency of air conditioners has increased steadily over the years. So our programs have actually lost controllable load because of the efficiency increase. So this is kind of getting it back to, where we used to be from a capacity standpoint.
I see. All right. Thank you.
Okay. So to that point, you haven't lost from a capacity standpoint because the efficiency gave you that all the time when you don't need it and when you do need it. The reason that you need this is not because air conditioners have become more efficient. It's because you are choosing to rely too heavily on interruptible power and can't meet your load often in the high heating system.
I don't know that I would go that way. Certainly, you know, if you look at the control history of our programs, you know, we haven't used it, a lot historically. I would say in that context, you know, in the last 5 to 10 years.
Well, any questions? Staff, did you have any questions?
Yeah, so this is Adam. Sure. This is Adam Renfin from Commission staff. So in Minnesota PUC, when they ordered you to add so much demand response onto your system, were those ads only on the Minnesota jurisdiction side?
They were across all our entire upper Midwest region.
Okay. And did that order influence this filing in any way, or just can you maybe speak to more broadly as you try to add new products, add new features, more technology? How do you see that evolving, I guess? Because you are getting a lot of push to add more demand response onto your system. So can you talk about maybe where you see this, you know, the next step going forward?
Sure. So I do think that we are in the process of evolving all of our programs. As you look at intermittent generation and of renewables that are coming on, programs are going to have to evolve because the grid's changed from where it was in the 1990s to where it is today and where it will be in the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. Programs are going to have to evolve. And so we have added new programs, across all of our jurisdictions for, giving customers the ability to kind of participate in different ways that maybe better suit their needs. So, you know, whether it's, the traditional saver switch that we're talking about today for residents, maybe it's a smart thermostat for people that have want to participate in a, you know, more of a technology-based solution. To, you know, we've got different CNI programs that allow customers to, you know, bid in load to for load reductions when we need them. So it is really an evolution of our portfolio that we're really looking at.
Did you have some?
I'm biting my tongue.
So the Minnesota order that required you to make additional demand response programs on the system as a whole. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So I believe it was based off of a resource plan that had done in 2017, I believe, was our baseline year. And by the end of 2023, we were required to add 400 megawatts of additional demand response load by the end of 2023.
And where? And so, okay. Where are you on that?
And still putting together our compliance filing, but I believe we crossed, 470 megawatts of additional load that we added.
And those are voluntary programs?
That is correct.
Okay.
One of the problems in my mind is these things are voluntary until we get forced or leveraged into making the opt-out so expensive people can't afford not to. And then they cease to be. And this whole time, I'm glad I started yakking, because I did have a question from the original filing too. But this whole time sitting here, I just keep thinking to something, and maybe I'll do some research and see if I can find it again. And I don't remember if it was the Department of Energy or some federal agency this summer or fall, I believe. It wasn't a long time ago, but not in recent weeks either. Someone indicated a need for Americans to evolve to a point of not setting air conditioner thermostats below 80 some degrees. I think it was 85, maybe it was 83, something like that. And I thought to myself when I read or heard that, good luck ever persuading Americans to do that. And here, we're going to carry it out. We're going to, yeah, it's voluntary now. Later on, it'll be an opt-out, and then we'll make the opt-out so expensive they can't afford not to do it. And, Ryan was kind enough to even point out there's future plans on this. And we are going to have it where the utility companies and the government will control our thermostats. And I find that concerning. I also find it concerning to not give people this opportunity to save $40. But pretty clear the direction the country's headed here. Now, my question, just a confusing number that I didn't understand. And so this is docket one. On page 3, so in the background there, there's a long paragraph and a short paragraph. I'm starting on the fourth line from the bottom of the long paragraph. Over time, the program's participation has expanded to over 50% of the residential single-family homes with air conditioning. Then, the beginning of the next paragraph, either you or Ryan said earlier, 12,000 residential and 600 commercial North Dakota customers with these switches. Well, that 12,000 and 600, that's a far cry from 50% of your customer base. So I'm trying to bring those two together.
Yeah. And
In order to qualify for Saver Switch, you have to have a single family home that has central air conditioning. So things like homes that have maybe a wall mount or a window mount air conditioner wouldn't qualify. Multi-family homes, apartments, things of that nature wouldn't qualify. So, our market share of 50% of the homes that qualify is an accurate number that we have across our jurisdictions.
Okay, thank you for explaining that, man.
And I think the 50%, that's referring to Minnesota and South Dakota as well, correct? Or is that just North Dakota?
I believe in Minnesota, it'd probably be higher. I think we're probably pushing 60% in Minnesota. But, 50% across all of our jurisdictions is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
So what's the total number of, is it 24,000 then, qualifying folks in North Dakota, customers?
I would have to, I'd have to go back to the our research on that, but you know, from a math perspective, that seems right.
Yeah, and I think that there is higher participation in Minnesota than North Dakota, so that's what skews it upwards to that 50%.
Sure.
I think it's probably a little bit under 50% in North Dakota.
Although, I mean, clearly, take out all the, I don't know how many customers you have in North Dakota, it's like 90,000, right?
Yeah.
So take out all the multifamily customers, all the ones with no AC, all the ones with window AC. You cut into that a long ways. So.
Yeah. Okay.
What's the current tariff right now on interruptible? How long? For no longer than 4 hours. Correct?
I'd have to double check to give you the exact the language, but it might be, I think it's four, but it might be six, but I can't say for certain.
Well, and sorry for my confusion. I'm on your application, page 5, under tariff modifications. I just want to be sure that I'm clear on what you're asking for. Under terms and conditions, you said this doesn't affect water heaters. And then in the first paragraph, it says water heating interruptions will normally occur on high demand days during summer and winter months. So I thought this didn't affect it. Or you're not increasing it.
Yeah, if you have the application in front of you,
yep.
So be page 2 of 6 of attachment A. You can see the redlined version of the residential controlled air conditioning and water heating rider.
Okay.
So then, yeah, all that water heating language, the water heating interruptions will normally occur on high demand days during summer and winter months. That's unchanged.
It's staying the same. Yep. Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yep, this application doesn't impact at all the water heating.
Okay,
yep.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yep.
Based on what you said. So, and then on the application, page 5. And we can go to the tariff. The last paragraph under terms and condition. The interruption as described above will be made so as to benefit load and may occur up to a maximum of 300 hours per calendar year. That's...
Yep.
That's
that has been added then.
Yep.
And so I think... I haven't seen in here an hours per event of 4 or 6, but the new addition is, that 300 max hours per calendar year of interruptions. That has been added.
That's like 7.5 weeks, and if you divide that, that could be significant.
Yeah, and that's, so far it's only been, that 1 to 2 times per year.
But that's quite a jump.
Yeah.
That's quite a jump. How did you come up with that number?
Well, 300 hours is...
How did you come up with that
days?
Number?
300 hours. It's 12 and a half days, right?
Yeah.
Ryan, do you know how we came up with 300 hours as the limit?
Again, to make, I think, the rules the same across all jurisdictions, I think that's been our number in, I know, in Minnesota as well as Colorado for... I think since we launched the program. But I could give you the history on that.
On the 80%, where you say the company reserves the right to cycle on a schedule designed to achieve 80% reduction for additional load relief, is there any sort of notification that the company gives to the customers that have this program? If you're going to jump up to that level? Or will they just... will that just happen and they won't really know why all of a sudden their house doesn't cool down ever?
They plugged in their air
Great question. Like a NERC level 2 event would be that we have, you know, rolling blackouts imminent. And so when we get to that point, we could either try to control air conditioning a little bit more and get us through that last problem area, or blackouts are going to happen.
So I guess I was thinking NERC. I was getting confused with the MISO different emergency levels. So help me. Do you know well enough how a NERC level 2 event compares to kind of the MISO hierarchy of serious grid events?
Unfortunately, I do not.
All right. Adam, do you have any idea?
No, I mean, we could follow up. Yeah. I was just looking at that the other day.
It's more extreme than just a...
It's not like step 2.
No. All right.
So what in here prevents someone who, let's say they have pretty strong needs for keeping their... at least they believe they have very strong needs for keeping their temperature low. What prevents them from just signing up for this and knowing that on these days is just the day they have to turn on their 4 window air conditioners?
Nothing would prevent them from doing that.
They're going to eat up that $30 pretty fast if they're buying window units and running them. or $40, I should say.
I'm thinking more ahead when it's not so voluntary anymore. Anything else? So... Are there any objections to the evidence produced today becoming part of the official record? And when I say the evidence, I mean both the recording as well as the handout that you brought us?
No objections.
Okay, so the evidence will... Oh, right.
None from staff.
It's like, no.
Whew, I'm glad you didn't object. So the evidence will become part of the record upon which a decision is made. Are there any other matters for the record? Ryan?
None from staff.
Alex?
No, I thank you for your time and attention.
Okay, then thank you very much, everybody. We will close this informal hearing.
Thanks, Ryan, for being online.